You're listening to Face Off, Episode 2, recorded January 25th, 2009. All right, welcome to Face Off, your technology podcast. I'm Jade Robbins.
Mark Sanborn.
And we're going to be talking about pretty much the things that interest us, and we don't really give a rat's butt about what you guys think. So, all right, Mike.
Mark.
Hey, Mark. How's it going today? What do you got?
Let's see. I've got web, important people to be following on Twitter.
Ooh, that's a good topic. That's a good topic.
And for, web.
Tell us your topics.
Oh, okay. We've got web apps that are nice.
Ooh, that's a good topic, dude. That could almost be like a recurring theme.
We're going to talk about listening to music while you program. Either do you do it, do you not? Well, what types of music?
This is a big topic for us.
An IE7 plugin.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about make an IE work the way you want it instead of the way Microsoft thinks you want it.
I'd say that's impossible.
Well,
but you should prove me wrong.
There's people that are out there that are trying. We're going to talk about a project that I'm working on with UPS. Desktop virtualization. I guess that's your topic.
That's fine.
We're going to talk about some Perl, some SVN.
Ooh.
And blogs and wikis in the workplace.
Ooh. That hit me on a nice bone there. You know that, right?
Nice. I knew it would.
Another one I want to talk about, too, I'd like to touch on at least a bit, is like iPhone/mobile website templates, and some of our thoughts on those. So, yeah. All right. So let's hit it.
All right.
What you got?
All right. The web people to follow on Twitter.
Okay. Let me crank.
The first one I got on my list is Eric A. Meyer, I think is how you say his last name.
Meyer.
Eric.
What are you doing? Whatever. This is terrible. I need to chat with you so you can link me up. I need links.
Okay. I don't have my Twitter account logged in, so I can't tell his exact name to follow him. But he's basically the guy. I think he's I know he made the reset famous.
Oh, really?
The Yahoo is based off like the CSS reset, like if you want consistent results in your CSS, you need to reset it before you start going if you want it consistent across multiple browsers. And his reset is supposedly awesome, and I've only used it. I don't know enough about everybody else's resets to make, say, oh, yeah, this one's awesome. Other than, yeah, it works. I don't have too many problems with my CSS, going to different browsers, other than a few little things.
Yeah.
Like
He is at twitter.com/MEYERWEB, Meyer Web.
And the reason I say is because he's one of the, I would say, I mean, he's been doing CSS. Let me back up. He's mainly HTML CSS guy,
okay,
as far as I can tell. Like, he leads the way in that. He's been doing it for years. And, I mean, how many followers does he have?
Oh, God. Tons. 8,000.
Yeah. Only 8,000.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
If you're looking for somebody this is the guru, okay? Here's the guy that everybody else looks up to on CSS, HTML, I would say. So yeah, if you're looking for somebody on Twitter to follow and keep up with the newest, latest stuff on that, I would say follow him. My next thing would be if you're starting a blog to either monetize, do some branding, get your word out there, whatever, I would definitely check out Gary Vaynerchuk.
Oh, of course, yeah. We both love Gary. He's
all about Twitter and brand image, starting stuff up, getting your ideas out there, no matter how small you think they are.
He is twitter.com/GaryV, GaryVee.
And he's also got a TV, GaryVaynerchuk.com?
Yeah, well, he really got his fame by starting the Wine Library, which is a giant wine store. Yeah. And then he started Wine Library TV, which is a video podcast about wine.
Yeah, his videos are very inspiring, and his Twitter, I mean, he Twitters all day long, pretty much.
Yeah, he really pushes that. You need to connect to people as much as possible. I mean, he gets thousands of emails a day and personally answers each one. I mean, it's not like the most articulate answers. I've gotten one from him. But, just the fact that he cares enough to go through. I mean, he has to get, a couple thousand a day.
And answer the same questions.
Yeah, exactly. Like, which vino is good with, steak?
does he just do one liners back, or does he sometimes?
Depends. I mean, what it is. If it's just like, you know, like, what do you think of this wine? You know, he'll be like, I like it, you know, or it's pretty good. But I mean, he tries. I mean, you can't.
Well, I mean, 5,000 emails. Oh, I mean, yeah. You couldn't spend 20 minutes on everybody.
No, exactly. So. That doesn't work.
The other one that's big that I mean, just I'm a fan of SEO. And if you've got a blog, you should be too, at least in somewhat. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be an expert, but you should definitely look into it because it makes a huge difference is for traffic. I mean, huge. And his name is Matt Cutts. He's a Google employee, and he's, I think his official title is like communicator, blog, something or other. But
really?
He's in SEO. SEO, like communicator for Google.
His bio says he's head of web spam team at Google.
Web spam. Oh, it's, yeah, like basically communications, like spamming out, like, you know what I'm saying?
I just watched, he gave like a talk somewhere, I can't remember, I think he Twittered it, but he gave a talk about different kinds of web spam out there. Oh. It was really pretty interesting.
Well, he's got a, you can follow him on Twitter, and he also has a blog, mattcutts.com, I believe, that's what it is.
Yep.
His deal, T's. I mean, yeah, so Matt, yeah.
On both Matt and Cutts, whoa, that's crazy.
Basically, you're going to get the best SEO you can tips from this guy. I mean, go read through his stuff. And he's works for Google, so you know it's legit. I mean, and here's the best part about following him is you're going to know the SEO trends before the SEO experts are going to know the SEO trends because he works in Google and he's going to tell you what they are.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
done it before.
And I mean, like, the only thing that people optimize for is Google. I mean,
yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, Google's Google. So this is the guy you're going to want to know. If you want SEO, this is the guy.
Yeah.
I've heard him say stuff on his blog that no one's heard before, but and it came just from him. Like, this is how Google does it. And this is the way I work. You know, this is this certain link or this certain attribute is higher rated than this. So, you know, you should focus on this or whatever.
Like, not super documented.
And that's like, yeah. And then that is the only time that's ever mentioned on the internet, as he just said it just then. So if you want the latest stuff, you got to follow him. And that's,
he's cool. I'll give you that. He's at twitter.com, Matt Cutts, MattCutts.
And do you have anybody for Twitter?
I follow on Twitter. This is Mark Sandberg, guys. You can, of course, follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JadeRobbins.
And you can follow me at Mark Sandborn, one word, S-A-N-B, as in boy, O-R-N.
You know, you really hit most of the people I follow. I, of course, follow the sort of regular internet celebrities of, like, Veronica Belmont. Mm. And
yeah, those are mainly web guys that I had down, but I do have some others for technology.
Yeah,
in general. Leo Laporte's on there.
No, of course, yeah, it can't be Leo.
I don't know. It's good to have a good mixture of different followers on Twitter, I think, because, I mean, Twitter's something you're pretty much going to log into every day or, you know, check every day.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using it properly, you're pretty much at least once a day.
Well, my wife signed up for Twitter, and she was really excited about it. She's like, oh, Jade, I signed up for Twitter. And I was like, well, that's great, but you're just following me. And I was like,
that's not how Twitter works. It's funny.
Like, yeah, at first you kind of look at it like a microblogging or like a status service, you know, like Facebook status, where you're like, oh, I'm going home. And that's fun. It's great to add to the conversation. But I've gotten a lot from Twitter from following, following more than even I ever would posting my own stuff.
I think it took me almost 2 months before I even got Twitter, like really got it.
Yeah.
It was like when I first logged into it, I was like, I don't know. What's the point of this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to do a status update, but what is this? Why is this better than like just Facebook or something?
Mm-hmm.
Like what's the deal?
Yeah.
And eventually, I don't know, it grows on you and then you find you're like, yeah, this is totally different. And this is useful.
Exactly.
It's something that you can't really explain. You got to try it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's really
you might not get
hoc.
It at first.
Like, I started with Jaiku, and to this day, I still defend Jaiku to the death. I think it's a great service. But Jaiku is really, it's more personal. It really is. It's, I would like to have people I know locally on Jaiku, because Jaiku really is more of a status update website or a microblog to your friends. Whereas Twitter, I mean, the strength of Twitter is that everyone's on it, right? I mean, everybody has a Twitter, and hopefully you can kind of get all this information together and make it useful, right? I mean, I just the fact I love about Twitter is the @reply. Like, even if you don't just @reply, but you @someone's name in the post and it links to them, I mean, that revolutionizes it. You just start – it's like Wikipedia. You just start browsing links. You start looking at people, who they're following. Like, who is this person following? oh, that person's on Twitter. I didn't even know.
And it gives you a whole other way to communicate with these people. Like, you're talking to celebrity. I mean, you see what celebrities are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Internet celebrities.
Yeah, exactly. Z-list, triple Z-list.
A side effect of Twitter is it's the main majority of people that use it are tech people.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Web developers, you know, internet celebrities.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, though, because I've seen a couple people I know, or not even people that I really directly know, but I've seen them join Twitter, and I've seen them fail and stop using it. And almost always it's because they didn't follow anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to. Twitter is not even about single people anymore. Organizations have Twitter. I messed my pants when I saw that there's actually, like, newspapers in Montana that have Twitter accounts that they post to. I was like, holy crap. I was surprised that anybody knew what Twitter was.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I think – and I was really resistant because I was a Jaiku fan. I was
a good
really
point, though.
Resistant.
Like, even the internet celebrities, what's the ratio? What's the proper ratio? I mean, if you were to be a Twitter guy, you know, and try to promote your brand image on mm-hmm. Twitter, what's the – I mean, do you follow people or are you going to be the guy that just has everybody follow you? I mean,
see, okay, I mean, this is what I looked at it. I thought, like, if I had, if I, you know, my own personal brand image, like, for me, I think should be follow everybody. I mean, aggregate as much information as you can, right?
Okay.
Why not, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's especially, I mean, the great thing about being in Montana is we are behind the rest of the world, right? So if you can get new, cool stuff by following these people living in California right now who actually have connections and stuff, mm-hmm. hell yeah.
They're at ground zero.
You know, use it. Yeah, exactly, ground zero. But, like, let's say... So what I would thought, like, so let's say this podcast had a Twitter account. It would be like, you know, we could tweet, follow us, you know, or watch us record live on Ustream, yeah. right? And I would then, it would be like, I would only follow me and you. That account, you know, the podcast account would only follow me and you,
uh-huh.
right? Because if you're your personal brand equity is a reflection of you. So people you think to follow, I think it makes sense to follow as many as you can. But you really have to think if you're using a corporate or an entity Twitter account,
right.
really be careful what you follow.
Yeah.
Because that's a reflection of your company. True. You know, and I personally don't want...
If you're using, like you said, the podcast, if it's going to be, like, used primarily as an alert service,
mm-hmm.
like,
yeah.
hey, we're recording right now, you want to check it out, then you're not going to really want to have banter going across with replies to random people. And
yeah.
things. Although you're going to reply to people that are leaving you comments about your show and things.
Of course, right?
Because that's anything to do with the show, but you don't want to get off topic too much.
Well, like, okay, so here's a great example. There's a website out there called Groove Shark. Have you ever heard of it?
Groove Shark, yes. I've heard of it, but I don't know.
It's like it's basically a website where you can listen to individual tracks. I mean, it's Flash-based, but it's pretty cool. Groove Shark has a Twitter account. Okay. But the guy who is making Groove Shark uses it pretty much as his personal Twitter, and it bugs me.
Oh,
it really does
yeah.
bug me. I even think you can take this sort of entity Twitter account and make it flexible enough to be, you know, fun and exciting, but you have to be really careful, right? Because, like, he makes it sound personal sometimes, and it's like you have to remember that that's your brand, right?
Uh-huh.
And if something's your personal brand equity, it's okay to do what you want with it because that's your brand equity.
Mm-hmm.
But... like when I see the Groove Shark Twitter account making like personal replies to stuff, it makes me mad. Now, one time I made a comment about the Groove Shark service and it replied to me saying, you know, oh, sorry, we're fixing that right now. We've had some network issues. And
that's perfect.
That's awesome.
That's what you want.
It's exactly what Gary talks about. You got to interact with people like that, you know? That made me feel good. I was like, oh man, Groove Shark.
On that same note, like something that Gary talks about is, if you're going to do it, though, let's say you're a company, you're listening to this and you're a company, you listen to our podcast, and you're mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, I haven't checked out Twitter. I'm going to, you know, maybe check it out and implement it. What you don't want to do is just have some, like, let's, Obama, you know, when he went in there he had his, it's basically just alerts and check out this news article. So
uh-huh.
That's not what it's.
Marketing interns,
if
right?
If you're going to do it, be the person that you're pretending to be. Like
exactly.
Or that your username is. If you're Obama, have Obama himself write stuff.
Yeah.
Not all the time. I mean, obviously, he's a busy man. He's not going to be able to Twitter all the time. But have – if
the man has a goddamn BlackBerry, how can he not Twitter once in a while, right?
That's what's, like, if you're going to do it, I mean, it has to be coming from you. It can't be if it's obviously not coming from you, it's not going to work. It's not,
like,
that's not what it's
the
for.
Britney one, Britney Spears. I saw she was on Twitter and I checked it out.
It's not her.
She's the worst. Yeah, exactly. It's like Britney is heading something. It's like, you mean me. You're supposed to be Britney Spears,
right.
correct?
Yeah.
That bugs me.
Now, yeah, if it was actually her, oh my God, was she? She'd have the most followers of the, you know, she'd have cute. She probably does anyways.
She'll like do a personal one like once in a while. It's like, oh my God, I'm in Japan and the cars are tiny. But like, that's like a serious tweet.
But this
from
is the way
Britney
it's gonna
Spears.
Go. Like, it's, you know, some of these celebrities are gonna have this stuff and you're gonna be able to connect to them at a level that the People magazines and you know can't give you.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Is gonna be
right.
From them. This is their own words.
Yeah, dude.
Like, let's say. The National Enquirer makes fun of her and says this and this. She can actually get on there and say, "Hey, this is a rumor."
Yeah,
you know,
it's like the Lindsay Lohan replies. Have you seen those?
No, I haven't.
Or Kanye West?
Yeah,
he like has MySpace.
Really?
That man bends over and gives it to himself way more than he should. He replies in like all caps, makes himself look like a complete idiot. You know?
But is it him?
It's him. Well, that's God! If it's not him, then he needs to fire someone because it is terrible, right? But see, it's funny. Some people don't take. Maybe it works for him, though, because it's your personal brand equity and you need to make it what you want it to be. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's like, oh, my God, you people are screwing yourself. Right. Why would you do that? Like Lindsay Lohan doesn't make sense 3/4 of the time. It's like a text message.
Yeah. But like, yeah, if you're going to do it, if you're going to do it properly, you got to make it you.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going to say like a Britney Spears or something. If you're a company, obviously there's going to be different people replying and things. But.
See, like, here's a good example. I think here's a great example. Leo Laporte, right? Mm-hmm. I love Leo. I think, but during the election, I got tired of him tweeting so much political stuff.
True.
He has a problem with his brand equity, I would say, right? Because
I stopped following him.
Yeah, me too, right? I don't know. Had he created like, and I follow it now, and he needs to use it like this, like a Twitter account. There's a Twit Live one. But that, you know, and then he can have his personal Leo Laporte and talk about politics and whatever he wants, you know. But his problem was he set up his Twitter personal branding to be that's me about technology. Like, I'm following Leo Laporte.
That's his expertise.
For technology news, right? Because he's the dude.
Right.
I'm not following him for political commentary.
He knows his stuff on that.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't want to hear political commentary on someone that I'm waiting for tech news on. I thought he kind of had a crisis. I don't know. Maybe he sorted it out now. I just haven't followed him again. And I think he lost me because, I mean, I haven't listened to many of his podcasts after that because I was like.
This is a good point. So if you're trying to get people to follow you, you know, stick with what you got them there to follow you in the first place. Your tech stuff or whatever
exactly.
Your expertise is.
But then, you know, but again, as we talked, right? See, that's why I'm saying it. I followed him for Twit. And he was using his personal brand equity kind of for Twit stuff. And it got confusing, right? So I think had he set that up, I mean, it's his personal brand equity, and he can do what he wants with it.
Right.
But if, you know, maybe he doesn't want people who don't have the same political views as him to follow him. That could be. That's his personal brand thing. I just think he did it sort of lopsidedly.
Okay, and then this leads me to my next question on the Twitter thing is how often do you update? Because if I, you know, if I'm following this guy and he floods my thing and I can't say, and I miss other people's stuff. I'm you know, that can bug people.
That's a tough one. That really is because it just depends on your audience.
Do you go in streaks and you just do 5 in a row or is it, you know, what do you do?
Well, it depends. Like, so if I'm not following someone, I don't see people's at replies. Is that default? I don't remember if I changed that or not.
Yeah, I believe it's default because I haven't changed anything and that's the way mine works.
Okay. Yeah. I'm okay with that because someone like, I mean, if you look at like, Gary Vaynerchuk, he'll reply to a million people, you know?
Yeah. I don't see that.
And I don't see that. Exactly. I like that.
Yeah, because you're not following the person he's replying
exactly.
to. That's why.
But I don't know. It just depends on if it's useful or not, right? I mean, right? If, no, it needs to be a conversation. That's a tough question. That really is.
I think it's got to be fairly limited, though.
Yeah, okay.
It's like spam in an email box.
So if you're doing it as a company, the sort of corporate Twitter account or service account, you need to really limit what you do because that can screw your stuff up, right? I don't want to see Twit Live or Woot tweet a million times.
No.
But then again, like Woot, all it does is notify me when there's a new product and when it's sold out. Mm-hmm. And that bugs me. Like I wish there was a little bit more. You know, I wish there was more to that than just product updates. Like, I don't know. It's a tough one. That's a tough question. Personally, yeah. I think do what you want.
Yeah. I think I guess it's on your audience and what you're saying, but you do have to, I would say you have to be careful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, because Leo, he would go 2 days and wouldn't tweet at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you have 20.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to read these, for one, because it's not
content I'm interested in.
Well, yeah. Topics. First of all, yeah, that was the first problem, is it's not content I'm interested in. Even if it was, I have to catch up, and it's like, I feel like I'm behind because, you know, I'm 20 Twitters later.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, it's
all right. So web apps that are nice.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
You said Grooveshark. Let's talk about this one.
Okay, Grooveshark's great. It reminds me a lot of Last.fm, except for it doesn't have the Last.fm, I thought, was really revolutionary because it had all kinds of desktop applications to record what you were listening to the remote server, and kind of it was kind of an independent tracker of what you were listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Grooveshark, but then Last.fm kind of came into this thing where they now have like songs online that you can listen to and stuff like that. Grooveshark kind of does that without all the social crap. It's really just a site that you can search for songs and play them. You can make a playlist and embed it into a page. It's really an interesting program. I don't know if it'll make money and last,
though. Is that the program that you, or like you sent me a list of stuff to listen to, remember? Is that the
one? My techno playlist. Okay. That was
Grooveshark. Where I heard it from then.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah, that was cool because you could make a playlist and say, hey, check this out.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Is what I'm listening to. That's cool.
Yeah.
And you can't really do that with Pandora. I was actually looking. You can't really share. You can. You can share if you send it to an email, mm-hmm. but you can't. Like,
you can't just say anybody.
You can't have like a public link that you can give out or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Like exactly. I have a certain radio station. I was like, maybe somebody like the see this. I have thumbs up and thumbs down on certain artists, and I was like, you know, this is a good channel.
Pandora is not very social at all.
You can send it to one person through email or something, but there's no.
Mm-hmm. No public link. It'd be cool to post it on your blog.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is what I listen to.
In fact, that was exactly what I was thinking of. I was like, here's the stations I listen to on Pandora. I was going to put it on my blog.
Yeah,
in my
exactly.
About section.
No, it doesn't work.
You're saying Grooveshark maybe? Well, playlist.
It has like an autoplay function. It's definitely not a radio station.
Okay.
Pandora, you know, is supposed to be a radio station, give you new, fresh stuff.
Right.
Grooveshark is not that. It can do that. It doesn't do it very well.
How does it monetize?
I don't know. That's a good question. So I don't think it'll last. I think it's running on VC right now. Let me look.
Not much for advertisement pop-ups or anything?
None on there right now.
None. Huh?
There's no audio ads at all that I've ever heard.
So we started off with Grooveshark, but we've kind of entered a few more, like Last.fm and Pandora.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Just now. So we should probably talk about those. Pandora's a similar thing to Grooveshark where you can have a radio station, listen to new stuff. It's actually great. Like you'll put in a certain artist and you'll hear a song that you've never even heard from that artist or something, or you'll something just like it that's awesome that you've never heard at all.
Yeah.
So I like Pandora for discovery of
Pandora
music.
Yeah, and Pandora's best because it discovers music based on sort of atypical methods, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places say, okay, so you like Metallica, that means you like Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, or it's a super high probability that you like Iron Maiden. Pandora does it off things like music syncopation, like the beat, musical styles.
And probably what everybody else has already done. Thumbs up and thumbs down and stuff, too. A little
bit. Yeah, I mean, I think it has to. But, specifically, like, if you go to...
To start with, it must.
Yeah, I mean, this is what's so cool about Pandora. If you go there and, you start listening to a station, it's loading up. Give me one second. I'll tell you exactly.
Are we going
to
hear some music here?
Oh, you
popping up?
You want to hear some music? I can give you some music.
Well, I was just wondering, because it doesn't autoplay when you feel like...
Yeah, I muted it, though. Okay, so let me get to a good radio station, right? Like, my Chuck Mangione Feels So Good radio station. So let's... Alright, see? This is good stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now I can, like, go to the song.
This will be
and I can say... I can click on the song and say, why was this song selected? Why was this Groovalicious song selected? Based on what you've told us so far, we're playing this track because it features smooth jazz elements... A tenor sax solo, a melodic piano solo, background synths, and electric bass playing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, other music service says that they'll play stuff because...
And you're like, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. I mean, that's beautiful. That's just amazing. Love it. Love Pandora.
Okay. First
of all, and Pandora has an amazing iPhone application.
Yes,
amazing.
It does.
10-4.
Working around the house, it's so awesome. With a little bit of wireless, and you just pop that in there, and it's awesome.
Like at work, because we have wireless everywhere, I can like put it, and it's, you know, my iPod Touch is tiny, so I can like slip it right in my little pocket, walk down, like get coffee, and like not skip a beat the whole time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It is. Yeah, I love it. Some problems with Pandora I've ran into is not always. It's weird. Some stations
will
play about 25, 30 songs, and that's it.
Yep.
That's it. Never another one.
Nope.
It's weird.
And if you start thumbing up stuff, it plays those thumbed up songs.
It's weird, though, because like some stations it'll be fine. Like you'll hear new stuff all the time, and then certain ones you'll have the same stuff over and over. Have you noticed that Pandora's got new ad voice, like audio ads?
Yes, I did notice that.
I don't know,
man.
I don't know. Let's say you have a business and you wanted some, like Chuck Matt, what we just heard, mm-hmm. your business. You can't have ads playing. I guess they have do they have premium service?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. We should have looked this up ahead of time. We were putzes.
I mean, if they had a premium service where you can get the ads out, then that would be totally respectable. But
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not a fan of the audio ads.
Me neither. I really am not. Because it makes sense, though. Like, because I mean, if a business is like just playing Pandora all day long, no one's looking at those ads. Yeah, there's no eyes on those ads.
True. No. Well, I guarantee. Yeah, they should have a premium service for that.
I think they do. Hold on.
I know they have something because you know you get the if you're idle for 2 hours or so. If you're idle, for
$36 annual subscription.
Well, that's not bad at all.
A 5 hour timeout interval on the web. Seriously, they still have a 5 hour timeout interval
for the
you're paying for it. That is bull. No, okay, so no audio or visual ads at all if you pay. And oh, this is cool. If you do have a premium subscription, it removes ads on all devices, including the iPod Touch.
The 5 hour.
But still, 5 hour. Why are you timing out if I'm paying you money? That is BS.
Yeah, you should be able to set a time schedule, like from 8 to 5 or whatever.
Yeah,
then automatically turn off.
I wonder if there's a niche to be made in the business market there. Web business streaming, you know, like specifically. I mean, pay only.
I wonder what a lot of companies do, like XM or elevator music and grocery store.
Yeah, exactly.
Style.
I don't know. I think it has to be like a satellite service. Maybe not XM. Maybe like a premium. But I don't know. That's crazy. I love it when you go into a business and it's just a local radio station and it's like 975 the burb. You're like, what? I'm in a clothing store. I don't want to hear that.
So do you have any apps that you want to add on the list? Cool stuff.
Well, just recently, just because we kind of played around with it, MindMeister?
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce that. Meister? Yeah, I think it's Meister. MindMeister. I'm going to say MindMeister. It's a... what do you call it? Mind mapping app.
I love mind mapping.
I know.
You're a beast. Some crazy ideas for mind mapping. Love it.
Brainstorming is a great thing to do for business and stuff. But
everything.
Yeah, true.
Everything. If you're thinking of blog posts or.
I mean, this is just anything. A great little app. It's like, I mean, we Mark and I both mess with like Daya, in Linux.
And that's great. Like if you're doing flow charts, ER diagrams.
Oh yeah. UMLs,
whatever.
It's great.
But
it's just too clunky. It's too precise.
Mind mapping, you want something like instant, fast.
Boom.
Because you don't want to restrict what's coming out of your head.
Exactly.
That's the whole point of brainstorming.
Slow. Yeah, exactly. So this is a great little article. Like one of the projects I'm working on is I'm working on something I call Bozeman Review. And so I kind of made like a mind map. I mean, it's mind mapping is different than brainstorming. But what you do is combine the two, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, brainstorming is just like, just write ideas, write, you know?
Yeah. So here's my, I guess, my...
or maybe my understanding of mind map.
My understanding of mind map is you see what you just thought of before. Like, you see how the thought process came out. You got this reminded you of this, which reminded you of this, which allows you to say, okay, this is where I was and back. It's like
you
a can picture.
Like backtrack.
Yeah, it's like a video of your mind of how you thought of that process.
Clever,
and so you can add more to it.
Okay.
You know, or you can, that's my envision of it. So I use it as a brainstorming tool.
Oh, okay. That's clever. I like that.
This is kind of like a map of how you came up with that thought process.
A map of your mind, maybe. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Throw that out there.
Yeah, but I like it. It's pretty easy to use. You can share, like Mark was brainstorming some stuff and I was watching it. I mean, it was kind of like Google Docs, like I saw the changes pop up and I was like, yay.
Hooray. And you can export it to PDF and I think some other things too. You can you could probably do a CVS or something too.
Let me see. I'm going to export it.
See what options you got.
Mine, it does other. Ooh, that's clever. It does other mind mapping software file types too, like FreeMind, Mind Manager,
nice,
RTF, PDF, and an image file. Image. Pretty
RTF, I guess, would be good enough if you wanted to integrate something.
True. Clever. I like it.
But PDF or print it off or just PDF save for it image, in case, right? Save it in case it, whatever.
Like you save it accidentally to a remote share and everybody sees your breaking. But yeah, that's another one I use. I do want to give a shout out to a couple of good web apps that died this year that I'm kind of bummed about. Stick it.
Really? Yeah. They died?
Yeah.
So Ustream?
No. You're thinking Stickam. Oh. This one is called Stick It. It was from a company called Values of N, little company. And what it was Post-it notes, but it was really smart in sort of aggregating what you wrote in the Post-it note. And kind of like chunking through it. So like if I put a phone, it would be smart enough to say like there's a name and a phone number in here. That's this Post-it is a contact, right? Because like a Post-it is anything. Like there's people with passwords on Post-its and there's people with basically a business card on their Post-it, like J. Robbins, 555-5555. But it was smart. Or like if it had a date on it, it could recognize it as a date and then you could pull like iCals and stuff like that. It just was smart about aggregating it and like allowing people to talk or write Post-it notes in human talk and converting that to computer talk, right? Hmm. I mean, that's the biggest thing right now, right? Is someone calls me up on the phone and says, Jade, we're going to have to meet tomorrow. You're going to have to get this done, right? So all I do is I grab a Stick It or, a Post-it note and I say like, meet lunch tomorrow, 2 a.m., bring assignment due,
Okay.
Stick It would have looked at that and said, okay, lunch tomorrow is an appointment.
Wow.
And bring assignment is a to-do item. It was really smart. Huh. They stopped development on it. They never officially announced it, but you could tell. They stopped development on it because they went on to this other product I want to talk about. It was called, I didn't really use it, but I should have because it was really smart. It was called I Want Sandy. Okay. Sandy. It was a... This was great. It was like basically Sandy was your assistant, but she did it through Twitter or email or SMS. So you could tweet, at I want Sandy, remind me in 5 minutes to call my wife.
A personal secretary.
5 minutes later, it would tweet you back saying, don't forget to call your wife.
Wow.
I mean.
That's cool.
And they both closed down. Values of End got bought out by some company.
And they just shut them down, huh?
Yeah. That this has been a trend in small web 2.0 companies.
They buy them out just to shut them down?
Well, they're not buying the product. They buy the team that created the product. Right? Do you remember Pounce? It was a microblogging thing.
Wasn't that a revision 3 or like
no,
a
dig? Friends of Kevin Rose did it.
I see.
The same thing. A company, Vox, I think it was Vox, bought the team and the intellectual property and shut down Pounce. Instead of buying Pounce, they just said, why don't you come work for us? That's exactly what happened to the Values of N guys. And it's so depressing.
That does suck.
I know.
Yeah, I'm going to look up some of it.
And things are getting bad. You know the economy's bad when Google starts shutting down services.
Yeah.
Right?
How about Ustream?
Ooh, good one.
For webcasting.
Bringing it back. I'm sorry. I always go off on huge tangents. So bringing it back, useful web apps, Ustream, and Stick'em. They're pretty much the same.
Stick'em? Stick'em.
Stick'em.
Yeah, I think Leo uses that, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Leo Port uses it. These are awesome. Awesome. Break it down what they are. Let them know.
Ustream.tv isn't Ustream.tv.
Yep.
Okay, so not everybody has the bandwidth to serve content to... say 1,000 listeners. Let's say you got a popular podcast or video. Ustream allows you – basically, you upload your podcast or video in real time, and they relay it to everybody for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically supposed to be live streaming TV.
Yeah, but you don't have
– but user-created TV. Yeah,
they provide the bandwidth, and they also have a chat room. It's all set up. You just basically pipe into them.
Yeah, exactly. It's very
They're both about this
flash based. I mean, that is the revolution. It's flash based stuff,
so it's
right?
Easy, yeah.
I don't want to have to
Install plugins.
Install plugins. Download. I mean, that's. I could not believe that the Google chat, the Gmail video chat required a plugin.
Really? Does it?
Yeah.
I haven't tried that one yet.
So, like, you can't do it on Linux. Why? Why are you not just using default Flash?
Yeah, because, yeah, they've already done all the work for Linux.
Google, come on.
How about Stickam? How do they compare?
They're different feature sets. It depends on what you want. I think Stickam kind of focuses more on interactivity, having, you know, the person doing the show and then maybe, like, you know, three or four other co-hosts that you can send video to. Ustream really is sort of like, here's my TV show. You know, I think where Ustream is really strong is if you have a lot of like live production hardware yourself, you know, like I have my mixer here, and let's say if I had like a TriCaster or something, you know, whereas like Stickam really focuses on kind of like the, you know, little dudes like me and you,
okay,
you know, making a show. And
so Ustream's a little bit more feature set or different?
They're different. Ustream is just more kind of like I'm one person doing my show, sending it out to everybody. And Stickam seems to be more interactive, I think.
Here's a service that I want to see succeed because I think the idea is awesome, but I haven't seen any work on it for like a year and a half now, and that's Grand Central.
Oh, what happened to that?
Google
died.
Bought them, so you'd think they'd be doing something with it.
Word was people were worried when Google announced things were closing that they were going to close Grand Central.
Because, yeah, that's awesome. Basically what it is it's a – you have one phone number that you give out to everybody. It's a proxy, basically. Mm-hmm. You give out this phone number, and you can have your devices communicate with this number. So, like, you can set up all kinds of rules. Like, if it's after 7 p.m., ring this phone.
Mm-hmm.
If it's before 7 p.m., ring this other phone.
So cool.
You can have all your voicemails. You know, it has built-in voice. It's basically a PBX or, like, a telephone system online virtual, which you can control and set rules. So mm-hmm. you can have, you know, the Verizon, you know, on the cell phones, they have, when you call somebody, you can have music.
Yeah, the ringback tones.
You can detect the phone number that's calling and give them certain music based on who's calling. You can block people. I mean, let's say you could say there's a lot of telemarketing stuff out of certain cities.
I wonder if like the big telecom companies maybe shut it down. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of revenue Verizon would lose. I mean, like a company like Verizon for things like ringback tones.
What else? I mean, I'm going to click on the feature set.
Okay, I got to quit interrupting you. I need to write these things down and quit interrupting you. I'm a big jerk face.
Yeah, so you can screen call. Oh, here's the thing. While you're on the phone, you can press a certain number, and it'll automatically start recording the call. So let's say
sweet.
You're so, like, talking
legal
to some
purposes?
Yeah, or let's say you're doing some freelance work, and the guy's like, okay, here's what I want. I'm going to, you know, describe what I want you to do. You know, I'm going to start, you know, you don't want to have to call him 20 times and ask him
again,
what was that again? You know, you can record the deal. You can block callers. So Verizon doesn't allow you to block callers. I don't know if you know this.
No, I didn't.
They do not let you block somebody.
That is bull.
If you, like, let's say you have somebody harassing you or whatever.
Yep.
You have to switch your number. They will not let you block somebody.
I think Verizon is the least consumer-friendly company I've ever seen.
I don't know about
the
other telco companies, but because Verizon in Montana, Verizon's like king over here. It's your only option.
Yeah, exactly.
So all your voicemail notifications are done via email and SMS. greetings. You can have like the big companies have, you know, like, what is your question regarding blah, 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 and you can have it forwarded. Like, okay.
Thank you for calling Movie Phone.
Yeah. Well, let's say you have a business running out of your house, you know. You can forward businesses to a certain phone or whatever, or you can have personal calls come directly to you, and you can still, it's like you give out this number to everybody, yet you can control what happens through this
number. Does the greeting play like a ringback tone, or does it play when you answer?
It says personalize your voicemail greetings by caller. So you could literally say, it's like, it can detect your phone number and say, hey, Jade, Mark's, you know, not in right now. It can literally use your name or whatever.
That would be really cool.
A web call button, yeah.
You know what would be really cool is like a ringback tone, but not like music, but like a thing explaining, like, thank you for calling Jade Robbins Industries. We will try to answer your call as soon as possible. Like, so that is a ringback tone, not like, you know, like, not like an automated system when you call and it's like, thank you for calling, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, as you're calling, it's like, thank you for – we will try to be, you know, try to be around for your call, but we may – you know, I may be in a meeting or something. I mean, you could give people That oh, that'd be so cool.
And then I'm just gonna I'm basically just going to the feature set, and we'll wrap this up real quick. But one of the cool features is the call switch. If your phone's about to die, the battery's dying, you can literally switch devices live, like in real time. You press a certain button and then forward it, bam.
Oh, another thing. No way.
I mean, there's it's so cool.
That is way cool.
But anyways, how we got onto this is I think it's gonna die because they haven't done anything for like a year and a half. Like I was in the beta like 2 years ago and I still haven't got an invite. And like they have a blog and they haven't updated anything.
Grand Central
I wish they could succeed.
Yeah, that's and here. Okay, so I can tell you one other thing though. I think you'll be lucky. Google has this right now, right? What happened with Jaiku? Jaiku was something that Google bought, and then it was one of the services that Google closed recently. An announcement.
They closed Jaiku?
Well, this is what they did. They are dropping active development on it. They're saying we're not going to pay developers for it, but they're not going to shut it down. They let the Jaiku people keep it alive on their own time. And are releasing the source code.
Wow.
Yeah, right?
So they paid for it, but then they're just going to give it away.
Yeah. Huh. So instead of being dicks and being like, we're closing it, you know, but it's our intellectual property. We're going to keep it. I mean, Google is so forward-thinking. That's cool. It's amazing, right? They're saying...
Is it part of the agreement that they can have their ads and things on it? Or is it just basically just, here you go?
No, what they're saying is we're not going to put any more money into this, but you guys can have it.
Wow.
Right.
And no stipulations, like, no, okay, we're going to give it to you, but if you succeed, you got to have ads on it.
No, yeah. They're
awesome.
Yeah.
That's
cool. So I think something similar will happen with Grand Central. I think Google will either release it back to the independent developers to get their own VC and do it. They won't just shut it down if they do.
That's cool.
But this is like a perfect service for Google to get direct. I mean, I would pay for that. I mean, I'm a little, you know, miser with my money.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to like web services, I'm like, you know, throw ads at me all you want. I just want it for free, but I would pay for that easily.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's gone.
The last time they, just for the Grand Central thing, the last time they updated their blog was April 22nd of 2008.
Oh, man.
So
what did they say?
Everybody, let's see.
We're not dead.
Although you haven't heard from us as much in the past few months. They're working hard, blah, yeah. Blah, blah. But that was so long ago that it's kind of sad. People that have it, I think the service is still working. Like that got into the beta.
Really?
Yeah, but it's...
You never got
into it? I'm just hoping. I'm hoping because I think it's a cool project.
Yeah. Well, you know, Google's doing a lot of stuff now too, trying to move stuff to their... what do they call it? Google Code thing or whatever.
True.
The Google framework or whatever. I can't remember what it's called, but
Google Apps.
No, it's like this thing. Maybe it is, but where Google takes care of all the storage and stuff. Like that's what Jaiku was.
Oh, code.google?
No, not like a code thing. It's where they are the repository for your app's data.
Oh,
I can't remember. But anyways, what
we'll look it up.
But like a lot of things is I think it takes a lot to convert things to that. So let's say a company like Grand Central has all this infrastructure built already. Google buys it pretty much for the idea, right? And then says, port it over to our system. You know, and then who knows? There might only be like two developers working on it right now with the way the recession's going. I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's a cool app that I wanted to add to the list. And
I agree.
Succeeds.
That's good stuff. I would love to see it come out. I think it would be a good one.
Do you have any other apps before we close this section of the show?
You know, nope.
All right. By the way, there's a million of them. I could probably add 20 to the list.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are just the ones we decided to cover this time. Do you listen to music while you program?
I do. I do, but there are a couple stipulations.
All right.
Well, it depends. Okay, programming, I usually like music that's pretty fast-paced, some good rock and roll usually. But things where it takes concentration... Like writing content, you know, I love to have music, but it cannot have lyrics.
Right.
If it has lyrics, I am screwed.
Or yeah, it depends. It can have some lyrics, but it can't not a whole.
Well,
lot.
I can handle like techno that's like, hello. You know, I mean, if it has a little bit, but I mean, if it's like a song, right. I'll be like in my head. You know, your PHP is the best. You standing in line till, damn it. You know, like it just doesn't work for me.
when I first learned PHP, I was listening to music and it wasn't working out. Like I had to concentrate because I had never written PHP before. You know, I'm learning and I had to have as much concentration as possible. And I found it was Buddy Rich. I had this, a lot of albums from him for whatever reason. And it's like this, it's jazz basically with no lyrics. And that did it for me. But like, I don't know. It's got to be a certain thing. Like I've been listening to reggae for whatever reason. It's like so out of my element.
I know,
like,
it's goofy.
But it's so goofy. But I think it's because it's, you know, a simple beat that you can
the ganja man can, right, Mark?
It doesn't change in beat.
Yeah, like
it's the same kind of deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like
constant.
Heavy metal is a good one because it's just constant.
Yeah,
and half the time you're not paying attention to lyrics because you can't understand them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some and you're like, yeah.
So
that's, rock me, baby.
That's, if I'm gonna listen to music, I'm with you. Some people can't listen to music at all when they program.
Oh yeah, some people require absolute silence. So that's not me. But yeah, I mean, I tend to do best when there's no lyrics. Like, I mean, I'm not a huge like electronica fan, but give me like a good electronica radio station, and I can get some stuff done.
Yeah,
because it's just good background noise that like keeps you pumped, but you don't have to think about it. It's just there, you know. Like, yeah, rocking. Oh yeah,
yeah,
that's good stuff. And I think that's what you're getting at with like reggae. Like, you don't really listen to the lyrics of reggae much. No. Like, I know I don't.
Yeah,
I can't understand them half the time, right?
Yeah, it's like Jamaican accent. You're just like, what?
That Jamaican cool, accent, you know? Is so thick, I can't tell. Yeah.
Well, I mean, an example of that is Modest Yahoo's, you know, reggae, and. He's a Jewish rapper, and I, you know, I'm not very religious, especially in that area.
You know, and, you're not Jewish,
but I listen to him. Yeah, exactly. And I listen to it, and it doesn't matter what the words he's saying, what he's even singing about, because it's the beat. It's good music.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes I almost find myself like scatting to it, you know.
Yeah,
like just like da-da-dum, da-da-da-da, you know, or like just doo-dooting to it, you know, right. Just because you don't know the words, but like you know the sort of like progression of the vocal,
right. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
So
you silly.
So
crazy.
What do you guys do? Do you listen to music while you program?
Yeah, that's a good question. I wonder.
All right, so the next thing I've got a project I'm working called UPS PHP, and it's hosted by Google, the Google Code. Program system, whatever. It's at code.google.com/p/ups.php. And here's the thing. When I started looking for here's the thing. So I had rates. I needed to get rates from UPS.
Shipping rates. Not everyone's a big UPS guy. So,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, keep me in line here. Because it gets technical. So rates for UPS, they have fuel surcharges, which goes along with the fuel prices. So the rates change constantly. Back in the old days, you would have like zones and things of where that's going to go. But online, if you're going to do any e-commerce, you have to know what the current rate is. If you're going to charge, you know, if you're Amazon or whatever. And what this does is it actually goes out to UPS. It talks to them and it gets the actual rate. And if you look at the UPS manual, it's like 400 pages, and they have no code for PHP. They have ASP.NET. They've got
Visual
Basic.
That is so ridiculous.
And
how can you do that? How can you have ASP code but not PHP?
That's awesome.
Ridiculous.
So what I've made is an open source API, or not an API, like kind of a framework for people with PHP to get this working. And it, you can get working in a few minutes. You basically just have to sign up to get a developer key from UPS, which takes maybe 24 hours. Is that what? Do you remember how long it took you?
It's quick.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. And as soon as you get that, you basically just plug it in, look at the examples, and follow along, and you've got a rate. But and it seems a lot of people are wanting this. I get questions and emails every day about this.
Well, it's funny because if you watch the comments about it, it's like, oh man, do you have one for FedEx? And it's like FedEx is a company smart enough to make code for people.
For anybody that's listening, FedEx actually provides PHP code and a sample code for their stuff. So
UPS is so convoluted. They are up on their high horse. Like you need an account as well as an access code and a developer's code
for each of the tools
for every tool. And you're like, what are you?
So I try to make it easy for everybody. I know, like, there's a lot of different, like, OS Commerce and things. They use some of these tools, but I've heard, if you go Google this, there's just nothing but problems finding rates.
Yeah, so that's tough.
So that's all.
That gives you a lot of traffic.
Oh, and the new thing I've been working on right now is label generation, where you can actually print a working label, put it on a package, and ship it out.
Here's what I was wondering.
That's my latest.
I heard you talking about this. So are all thermal printers, do they just use sort of the same protocol? Like, not like a normal printer driver, or?
Well, there's two main companies, like ATI or NVIDIA. You have two major mm-hmm. Thermal guys, mm-hmm. Zebra and Eltron.
Okay.
And Zebra bought out Eltron, so there's really only one.
Oh, no way.
Correct me if I'm wrong, anybody, but those are like, that's it. That's like the major, mm-hmm. that's it. They have their own code language. They have their own fonts and barcode fonts. So you send them like control characters, like control I A, like, you know, and that's an A. That's an A, you know?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. So you send that and barcodes, like you have a certain tag, and then you say the numbers inside that and then in the tag, and it'll create a barcode.
Like slash N, new line.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Ridiculous. Here's the problem, though. You can't send raw data to a printer from inside of a web browser. Mm-hmm. When you hit print, it's going to go try to print the page in whatever it is, ASCII. PostScript is actually what it is.
Yeah, normal PostScript. Normal printer stuff. Printer language, right?
So what I had to do is I had to figure out a way to print the raw code, the ZPL or an EPL2. Those are the languages for the thermal printers,
mm-hmm.
To the printer, and I actually ended up figuring out. And I'll be adding that to the wiki when I get that code completed. But that's what I've been working on, is label printing. And ooh. So, yeah. And then while we're on the Google code, I will show you another project that's really awesome. This is not me, but it's awesome. And that is the IE7 plugin. If you just go to Google and search IE7, that didn't work. Let's get the address for these guys.
Yeah, you should give them props, because this is massively awesome, I think.
Basically, it's a JavaScript plugin that makes IE6 and IE7 act like IE8's going to be until IE8's out.
Don't even. That is wishful thinking, that you think IE8 will be a normal acting browser.
Well, it's supposed to pass ACID 3 or whatever. It's supposed to be decent.
ACID 2? ACID 2 test?
Is it ACID 2?
Yeah, it's ACID 2.
So, yeah, it's code.google.com/p/IE7-JS.
Hyphen.
And basically, you can actually link directly to these guys, or you can download the script and include it yourself. And basically, it's not going to slow down your normal code, because it's an if IE then include this. Otherwise, it doesn't include
that's
it.
That's awesome.
So the only digging person that's going to have an increased page load is going to be the IE people, and they deserve it.
Yeah.
That's what I say, because I don't know. I mean, if your page loads fine without it, don't add it. But if you're having a little bit of problems, I recommend trying it out at least.
It's really a tough situation out there for web developers right now, because we all know Internet Explorer is not the way to go.
No.
I mean, we just know it, right?
They just don't adhere to standards.
It's exactly.
They're working on it now, they say, anyways, for
IE8. There are a billion users out there who have no effing clue.
Yeah.
No clue.
It's not fair to them.
Can't hold it against them, no. Right? I mean, my grandma has no clue what all she knows is she goes to the big blue E to go to the internet. She thinks the E stands for internet, you know? And I mean, that's not their fault. They don't know.
You can't hold it against them.
And as much as I want to, I mean, I want to put like a big JavaScript alert with a big background that says, you know, quit being a retard for using Internet Explorer, but it's not their fault.
Yeah. No, you can't do that.
And so, like, what do you do?
You got to look at the facts. You know, we as tech guys, we're like, mm-hmm. who uses IE? I don't even know anybody that does it.
I don't even know
one person that uses IE. But if you look at the statistics, I think we're going to make some statistics up right now.
Yeah.
I don't know, 80%, 70%. It's still really high in favor of IE.
Oh, very high. Very high, very high.
I don't
high.
Know.
I mean, it depends on whose stats you look at. Like, you can't trust Alexa, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. If anybody's wondering, just go Google Analytics your site and go check it out for yourself.
Yeah.
Because that'll give you real data, at least for your segment.
That's true. That is a good point, too. I mean, like, your site, how many people use Internet Explorer? Very low percentage, isn't it?
I don't want to log into this computer. We'll do it. We'll put it in the show notes. We'll put it in the show notes. See how.
For the record, Mark is using my old laptop, which I think might be virus laden. So he's ridiculously nervous to pull the trigger on logging into anything important whatsoever.
I'm being a Steve Gibson over here.
I
want to be secure.
I don't know. I would say here's the takeaway message for this. You know, try and educate the people you know who don't know better. Because, I mean, it doesn't matter how many W3C standards come out. It doesn't matter whatever. The only way it will change is if people know that, one, IE is not doing it right and demands Microsoft fix it, which is just going to take a huge shift in culture, or two, use another browser that does.
And even if IE does fix it in IE 8, how long is it going to take before 6 and 7 people switch over?
Right, yeah.
When's your grandma going to hit Windows Update and update her computer?
Exactly.
You know,
she probably won't. Exactly. I don't think she'll make it that long.
Exactly. Well,
my grandmas are very healthy.
But no, I mean, yeah, people are still using IE6. How old is that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so educate. I know we all hate to get that phone call from our relative who doesn't know anything and wants to know something, but maybe it's time the family tech guy. But maybe it's time to put that to some good use and give people good education. Instead of just doing it for them,
I'll tell you right now, if I format a computer to help anybody out, I put Firefox on their computer and remove the IE icon everywhere I can possibly find it.
Exactly.
So should we talk about desktop virtualization?
All right. Yeah, we got enough time for that, and then we better wrap her up. Okay, so desktop virtualization. I think virtualization is one of the things that's happened. You know, maybe it's been going on longer, but in the past year has just radically changed the way things work. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that I hate to say it, I'll get flack, but maybe it was the fact that the Mac, you know, changed its architecture over to, you know, a normal one.
What does that mean? Exactly.
Well, it was like using PowerPC, and it was, you know, pretty much the only major computer manufacturer using PowerPC at the time. And then when it switched to...
Oh, to emulate like Windows stuff?
Yeah. Okay. It changed to like x86 or whatever it is, you know, the Intel architecture.
Yeah, okay.
It really changed the way, I mean, things happened, right? Now you can virtualize things as much. It made virtualization very popular because there was a lot of people using the Mac who really wanted to still use Windows stuff.
Oh yeah,
which is kind of like a cheating workaround, right?
But you've got legacy, apps. Yeah. They're not going to work in Linux or OS X or whatever. Then businesses rely on them.
Yeah,
I think it makes it easier for people to make a switch between different operating systems, though.
Oh yeah, it removes that pain, right? Because you're not getting rid of. I'm gonna throw it out. Photoshop.
Yeah.
Forever.
Right.
You know,
and until they make a Linux version, I'm going to be running a VirtualBox.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, at work, I run Linux, mm-hmm. and I love it, but I have to have some certain legacy Windows apps, mm-hmm. and I have a VirtualBox, and you know what? I cannot tell. There's no lag. I'll just put that out.
That's a beautiful part about virtualization. There, I mean, before when, like, on the Mac, you had to emulate an x86 architecture. Mm-hmm. It was terrible, right? I mean, emulation is you're transferring machine code and translating it, but now it's just like it. I mean, especially with CPUs with virtualization support, it just kind of slips it in the processor. It's like, just come on, just do this for me, and it just happens, right? Yeah,
I think that's part of it that's making the shift of virtualization. You know, the processor support.
Yeah, I that might have been like the switch that flicked it. I think I don't know.
What do you use for virtualization?
Well, I'll probably get flack for this, but for my desktop virtualization, I use VMware Server.
Yeah.
I understand. It's one of those things, like, I probably should make the switch to, I think, what I know you're going to say.
VirtualBox.
Yeah, VirtualBox. I probably should make the switch. I've heard that VirtualBox is starting to, you know, kind of really take over leaps and bounds over VMware Server. It's just what I have right now.
I see. I haven't actually used VMware Server. I've used VMware Workstation.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that the one? It's like the VMware player, isn't it? Can't create an image or
The workstation you're supposed to, you can do everything. But I guess I was actually referring to the player when I said that.
Oh, okay.
So the player, I guess, is where you'd have to create it in something else before server.
Yeah,
came
exactly.
On. They recently made it free.
Yeah,
you'd have to use like QMU or whatever.
Well, yeah, beforehand, VMware Server was always available. I always used it for free, but it just it's pretty heavy-handed. It's running all the time. It's right. It's a service.
And in Linux, it installs like 2 network devices and like a couple services. It's pretty heavy, I would say.
But I remember at work, I was the guy who had VMware Server installed. So like when they were doing something for a class or something, I had to create all the images for them, like blank Windows XP images and stuff on my desktop.
Yeah. The thing I like about VirtualBox is, first of all, it works. I've been using it for a couple months now for Windows and Linux. Mm-hmm. Windows inside of a Linux host, and it's been great. And it's open source. That's where I like that.
Yeah, VMware is not open source.
Yeah,
it's free. It's not open source. It's freezing beer, not freezing freedom.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I don't
know. So virtual. I think it's.
I feel dirty using it sometimes.
I think virtualization is going to lead. I mean, it's going to help Linux.
Oh yeah.
Come up
immensely.
Because Windows, the Windows licensing, you have to pay it for every, even if it's virtual.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the university, they only have 4 that I used to work for. They had 4 computers, and then they used Citrix to publish them to hundreds of computers.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't just buy 4 licenses of Windows. They had to buy hundreds of licenses of Windows. So and that gets expensive, especially instead of having 1 server now with virtualization, you're going to have 10, 20 servers of separate services just to keep everything separate, you know. And you're not going to be able to afford Windows licenses.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe some people can, but I think that's where Linux is going to come in, because it's going to be really cheap, free.
Yeah, exactly.
To do multiple, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. And then one, I don't know. We've talked about this, you and I personally before, but like, I hate people that argue in favor of Windows who I know for a fact did not pay for it. I know for a fact.
In fact, in our earlier podcast, we were talking about a guy that rebutted my 50 Reasons I Love Windows. One of his arguments was Windows is free if you know where to get it.
Yeah, that's BS.
Well, what kind of argument is that?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I can pirate it. Well, that doesn't mean anything. Well, I mean, one of the main arguments we're making about Linux is that it's open source and free. That's bull. That's a stupid argument.
A lot of people think, oh, it's free. You know, oh, what's Windows? It's only like $100 and some or $200. Well, when you can start getting into servers and clusters and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking huge. And also, they have tons of restrictions like remote desktop. You can only have 4 or 5 people logged in without buying extra licenses.
Yeah.
Whereas Linux, you could have 1,000 people SSHing. So if you're a web host company like Dreamhost or something, you just couldn't afford to use Windows.
Yeah, how?
Well, I mean, they do have Windows web hosts, but they're usually more money.
Yeah, oh, they're very expensive. Because of the licensing. Oh, exactly. I mean, without a doubt.
I would argue that, never mind. That's, we're not going to get into Linux versus Windows.
Flame war, yeah.
You know, no.
But
I think virtualization is going to help out Linux.
Oh, it does. It gives,
and it's going to help out OS X too, because people are going to be able to try their Windows stuff, you know, or not even try it. They're going to be able to migrate without having to worry about something not working. Yeah.
What I envision happening with virtualization is one of the cool things that VMware does is sort of, it started with Parallels.
I never ran this, so I don't know, but I'll take your word.
But no, I mean, I'm pretty sure in my timeline it did.
Okay.
Is it?
The seamless, is that what
you're
saying?
Exactly, the seamless, right? So eventually what I think will happen is you'll have like kind of this generic base Linux install, but use like a virtualization tool and seamless mode.
Yeah.
And you'll never know. You'll never know. And if you can get like a CPU that's beefy enough to run 3 different operating systems, 2 of them virtualized, but you don't even see it. You don't see your desktop. All you see is when you launch, you know, Internet Explorer, it just comes up, right? I don't know why you would ever do that, but...
it would make your base operating system way more stable, too.
Yeah, exactly. I think eventually it won't be like I'm using Linux and virtualizing OS X and Windows. It'll just be like I'm running this operating system that allows me to run...
all these other things.
TextMate.
Any
Windows application. You know, I think eventually that's what'll happen. Because that seamless mode is really cool. You're like... all of a sudden you're like, oh my goodness, look, here is... this Windows app just sitting in my Linux box. How does that work? It's just running.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So should we wrap this up?
All right. Yeah, we should wrap this up. It's been going along, but we got plenty of ideas for next time. Remember, everybody, educate friendly people. You know, try and help them out, because not everybody's as smart as you.
Yeah. follow some of these guys on Twitter, because I mean, if you're gonna keep up on the tech stuff, it's gonna help.
Yeah. And you know, the easiest way is to follow me. I'm twitter.com/JadeRobbins.
And at Mark Sanborn. one word.
Oh, so just throw the whole URL in there. Help people out. Come on.
Twitter.com/MarkSanborn. One word.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. All right. Bye.